Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for May the 19th, 2023. This is episode number 163. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about Tesla teasing a new vehicle, the Honda e:Ny1 debuts in Europe, and the Rimac Navara is breaking all the records. And of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EVs editor and forum moderator. Joining us today is the effervescent Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have, or we will have soon, hopefully, the monumental Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle O'Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Autospec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. So welcome, everybody.
Morning.
How's it going?
Hey, guys.
Good. How are you doing?
All right. Not too bad. Okay. So Martin is out on the road somewhere. I believe he's going to try to pull over at a charger someplace and join us. I'm not exactly sure when that's going to happen, but you know, hopefully it will happen. So let's talk with Tom here about what we've been driving this week before we get to the news. So Tom, you put out a video this week. And let me just say first that I really like the new animation. That's very nice on your channel.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, the new
intro animation.
Intro animation. Thank you. I've been working on that for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, I can do So in this video, you check out the build quality of the Rivian R1S that you had recently delivered. And of course, being Tom Malogny, you went into pretty deep detail. People should go out and check that out to see everything. But I was hoping that you could give us maybe your takeaway about the quality. And also, you start the video out sharing the crazy noise your suspension was making. So maybe I should play that for people so they can see how crazy exactly that was.
I was almost thinking about at the end of the show, if I could back the truck, the R1S, into the garage while the camera's playing so you guys could hear it in real time. I don't know. Maybe we'll see if we have time at the end to do that. But it's loud and it hasn't been fixed yet. I have they were supposed to come today, but then they pushed it off. Yeah, there it is.
Okay. Let's see. I got the volume on. See, tell me if you can hear this. Oh, my God. Could you hear that?
You could go a little further.
Okay.
Yeah, this is the best intro.
What the f***?
I might as well watch your little animation here. This is great.
Welcome back. Those that follow my channel.
It's a super video. I really loved it. Yeah. So you go totally into the suspension there. And Did that get fixed?
No, not yet. Okay. So, you know, I've had it for about 3 weeks now, and
I recently purchased.
Oops, sorry.
Had a couple of defects when it arrived. That's really the most glaring issue. You know, and the funny thing is, I had an R1T, as you guys know, so I know about how loud the air suspension should be. I wonder if it was somebody who's new to Rivian, if they'd be like, oh, wow, this is just a really loud vehicle, because it's crazy how loud it is. Meredith, literally, like, she won't go to a shopping center with it, because when you get out and it airs down for when it kneels, everybody looks like within, I don't even know, 50 feet, everyone turns and looks, because it sounds like a big semi's air brakes releasing, you know. But right. In any event, I recorded it, sent it to Rivian, and they're like, yeah, there's definitely, that's not normal. And that they said what I thought. They said it really sounds like just one of the air suspension hoses, either wasn't attached at the factory or came off, where it's just, you know, when it's airing down, it's just shooting out instead of going into like a baffle or something. So I think this is going to be a real, real simple fix. And if I had a lift, I probably put it up on a lift. You could probably see it and just be like, oh, there it is, you know. But hey, you know, it's a new vehicle. Let them come out and fix it. So the thing is, this whole video, I wasn't really planning on doing this, but the whole video was inspired by one of Kyle's channels, Aspect Detailing.
Right.
Where Colton, that works with Kyle, does build quality, deep dive build quality. So I got a lot of comments and messages. Hey, Tom, I just watched Colton's video. That's pretty bad. How does yours look? Could you show us how yours looks? So I was like, yeah, I guess I could do that. You know, and I mean, it's not my wheelhouse, but I could walk around and point out things that I see that look like they're flaws and talk about things that are good. And the good thing about it is being able to watch Colton's video, and I put a link to that in the description of my video. I was able to really look at some of the things that he noticed were problems, so I could see if that was if his vehicle was a one-off, or if they just have a problem in that specific area doing that, whatever the problem was. So it was good. It was like a cliff notes for me ahead of time. I'm happy to say my vehicle is in much better build condition than what the one Colton reported on. His was only number 850. My VIN is somewhere around 8,600, something like that. So, you know, he got a real early one, and you could tell because there were a lot of defects. I tell you, the metal panel gaps on my vehicle are outstanding. They're not just good, they're outstanding. The front where the headlights aren't perfect. I point that out in the video where the hood comes down on the headlights. That's not perfect. But most of the other metal panel gaps are really well. And I will say that I do have some notes where people watching me pan with the video are like stopping it and saying, wait a minute, that panel gap is not good. You're saying it's good. You can't judge with a camera when somebody pans because you're getting it at different angles and it looks like it's a big gap. But then when you walk up and go dead on and look at it, it's perfect. So you can't really view panel gaps when somebody's panning a camera. When I went through it, I even measured it with the tool that I measure. I think it's right in here. My the thickness of my charger cables with, and it nearly consistent. So there's an issue right there too. Upon delivery, I had four minor issues. One, they didn't deliver the flashlight with the vehicle. Okay, they sent me a new flashlight. Someone made a mistake. They didn't put it in the holder. Number two, the plastic housing for the center console wasn't snapped in properly. So I just pulled it out and snapped it in. And then there was two problems, the air suspension problem. And what you just saw there, the lower gasket for the front passenger door doesn't set right into the track. I can put it in, I can snap it in all I want, and then next time I open the door and look, it's sagging out. So I don't know if it's a defective rubber gasket or if the track that it snaps into wasn't tight enough so that the rubber gasket just keeps coming out. If I didn't have Rivian coming out to do the air suspension problem, I would have just fixed this myself. I would have pinched that thing a little bit more, maybe just put a touch of silicone or something on that rubber gasket and pushed it back in, and it would have sat fine. I would not have made a service call for that. But since they're coming, let them come. They're going to bring a new gasket and do that. So those are like the major quote-unquote problems. Then I go around the vehicle and check out all the panel gaps, the plastic fitment. The biggest issue I think that Rivian has build quality-wise is the plastic, the lower plastic pieces. They're all over the place, and it is what it is. And they most of them clip on. Some of them might have one screw and a bunch of clips. And I pointed at a couple of places where I think it would have been better if there was a screw. But screws are more expensive. They add time to the manufacturing process. So I understand why they go with clip on pieces and whatever, but then, you know, you get these slight misalignments. And, you know, with regards to misalignments, this whole scrutinizing build quality really was never a thing until Tesla came out. Tesla's build quality was so bad early on that everyone was commenting on it. So then everybody said, well, you know, if you're going to scrutinize the hell out of Tesla, let's look at this BMW. And I'm not saying people didn't look at their vehicles when they used to get them, but we always did, but what was acceptable 15 years ago is not acceptable anymore. Everybody just constantly scrutinizes every little thing. That's what people are interested in. And that's why I went over the video and did this. But if you watch the video, see, I'm overall extremely pleased with the build quality. It's much better than what I believe Tesla was doing in their early years. Don't forget, this is the first year of production for Rivian. Will they get better? Will they get worse as they scale up and start producing more and more? That can happen when you start producing, you know, tens of thousands of vehicles a month instead of thousands and then hundreds of thousands of vehicles. But I'm very happy with the gaps and alignment on my R1S. It's very good.
All right. I just got a little text from Martin here. I don't think he's going to make it. So it's just us. Maybe I should try to speak with the British accent. Maybe not. I'll spare y'all. Hey, by the way,
pour yourself a cup of tea and
right. Is my audio okay for you guys? Someone was mentioning my audio was choppy earlier.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Okay. If in the audience, if y'all hear me, you know, breaking up or something, I can maybe reboot my computer here and
no, it sounds good. You sound good enough.
But going back to my video, also definitely watch Colton's video because he scrutinizes it even in more detail than I do. I didn't measure the paint thickness. You know, I'm looking at the paint. Right. It looks fine to me. There's, you know, my R1T had a few like orange peel, like, you know, they call it sections where the paint wasn't really nice and smooth. And even one of the corners, I saw like a little drip on the corner. It wasn't bad, but it was there. None of that on my R1S. The paint seems really good. I don't know how thick it is, but it seems really good.
All right. I guess people are saying the stream here was a little bit choppy, but it's better now. But hopefully people could make that out and we'll just keep going, I guess.
It seems good to me.
Here
I'm like getting normal, a nice clean stream. It might be individuals' internet. I don't know.
Right. All right. So, cool. Thank you for that, Tom. So, Kyle, so last weekend, you put up a video that asked the question.
Oh, wait. Before we get to me, can I ask Tom about this thing that he went to this week?
Oh, yeah, sure.
What battery swapping situation, Tom? Oh, what happened?
Tom, you didn't tell me about this.
Yeah. I haven't really talked about it yet because I haven't written or done a video on it yet, but I went to Ample out in San Francisco.
That was this week.
And they had a small press event for their V2 battery swap. Ample came out with a battery swap system 2 years ago, and they have the V2 version 2 of it, which is supposed to be better, more efficient, faster. It cuts the battery swap time in half from about 10 minutes down to 5 minutes. Although I recorded 6 minutes. But it's still it's a prototype what they had there. And Ample took an interesting approach to battery swap. I'm going to have a full video on it next week sometime, and an article on Inside EVs. Instead of, you know, we know that Better Place was the first, say, company that tried to do battery swap, and that wasn't a manufacturer. NIO's got battery swap. It's a little bit different because they're making the cars, making the battery packs. There, you know, it's a vertical integration, the charging stations, the battery swap stations, they're doing it all in-house. So, and it works, you know, Kyle has done battery swap with NIO over in Europe. I've did it in China on a few occasions. I swap batteries in China. The people I talked to there loved it. They basically, every one of them told me I wouldn't have bought a NIO if it didn't have battery swap. It's why I bought this car. So, but it's a different market. I'm still curious to see how that translates to Europe and then really how it would translate to US. But, right. You know, I'm not going to say it won't work, but I'm still a little leery of whether that's going to work here. But Ample's approach is different. They're basically saying our battery swap system will work with any electric vehicle. Exactly. Mind blown, right? Like, no, that can't work. The batteries are attached to the cars. They're an integral part of the structure of the vehicle. Like, how can this work? So, basically what they're saying is they go to manufacturers and say, look, we want to do battery swap with your vehicle. You don't have to change anything with your vehicle. Just basically sell cars without batteries. you know, or work with us to because they're not asking the manufacturer to change any footprint in the car, the battery pack or anything. What they're doing basically is a modular system that will fit into any car and use the vehicle's existing power electronics and connections and all that stuff. So, you know, we didn't do a deep dive. They weren't willing to do a deep dive, a deep engineering dive at this point. I mean, they wouldn't even tell me things as far as what's the chemistry of the battery pack, who their battery supplier is, like, and who they partnered with to make batteries. So, you know, we don't have all the details yet, but that's the marketing point is this will work with any vehicle and you'll be able to have modular sized battery packs. So it's not one size battery pack. If you live in the city and you don't need a lot of battery, you could, you know, swap out a tiny couple of modules, 20 kilowatt hour. But if you're going on a long drive for the weekend, you can then swap and get, you know, 80 kilowatt hours, as long as it fits in your car. Now the consumer version of this isn't going to come out for a while. Right now they're focusing on car sharing and commercial side of the business. And they actually have about a dozen battery swaps, the version one in California, and they're working with Uber, and the drivers are using them as constantly. These vehicles are on the road all the time. They go in and swap. They've done, I don't have the exact number, so I don't quote it, but a lot of battery swaps, and it works with the vehicles that they're using.
What vehicles are they using?
I have that in my notes, and I don't want to quote the wrong car, because we talked about other cars too, cars that they're going to be using. And I'm not sure exactly what the vehicles are. I'm going to have that all in the video though. What vehicle, but they've partnered with a couple of different companies. Fisker's one of their partners. Eventually the Fisker vehicles are supposed to be able to use ample battery swap. If you get one, you know, you'd need to have it, buy it with the plan that you're going to be using battery swap. Otherwise your battery is going to be attached to the vehicle. So we don't have all the details yet, but what they're selling us on is that they're hoping to partner with multiple manufacturers and make this available. Fisker isn't really part of the company. Fisker is a partner. The company is a partner saying we're going to allow this with our vehicles.
I see. Right. Well, I mean, so I heard something about commercial applications as well. Like, are they working with Amazon or something like that?
They didn't talk about all the contracts because they have a lot of contracts that they're working on. All right. Okay. It's still relatively early with the company, but they have, it sounds like they're going to be announcing some more contracts with companies that are big commercial companies to do pilot programs with battery swap. It's still pretty early with these guys, but you know, they wanted to announce, show their latest battery swap the station. The interesting thing about it is it's made for people to pull in, like the Neo system. You can't go in that. You have to park your car. They come and they pull it in. You drive in, the whole platform raises. So you can't like accidentally get out of your car and fall into like, you know, machinery moving around to do the battery swap. The battery swap stations are unmanned. Unlike the Neo stations, they're manned. They have to have a Neo employee. This, you pull right in and these tracks move your car. Like if you don't center it in the battery swap, it puts your car in the right position. It comes out, lifts the battery pack, snaps it back in. There's a green light. The platform lowers and you drive off.
Sounds interesting. But also still a little early days. They have a timeline exactly when you might see something actually.
Not for consumer. There's no timeline for consumer. Okay. They're going to start deploying these stations in a couple of countries. Japan, they're going to have them in Japan really soon before the end of this year, this new V2. And then somewhere in Europe, I forget the country, in addition to the US. So they do have some pilot programs that they're signed up and they're going to be working with. The vehicle that they did a battery swap with at this demonstration was a Kia Niro. So I don't know specifically if Kia has signed up to do this commercially for retail customers, but I know that they did, at least for the demonstration vehicle.
Interesting. So they would own the batteries and I guess, and so they'd have to supply all the batteries. That's really capital intensive.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Okay.
That's one of the issues with battery swap that we've talked about, is how, right, you know, capital intensive it is. And the stations can do 10 to 12 swaps an hour. The batteries are recharged with 100 kilowatt DC fast charge setup. So the site itself doesn't require the amount of power that, say, a DC fast charger supercharger site needs. It's much lower. And another thing that Ample talks a lot about, and I don't have any proof of that, but that 100% of their energy is renewable. So they must buy, you know, credits, or, you know, sign on to renewable energy providers, because these battery swap stations are designed to be built in 3 days. They're modular. NIO's just goes, and I think they just basically drop it on the site. This is similar. It comes in three parts, and it just takes 2 or 3 days to fully assemble it, as long as you have the power set up on site, which is always going to be the problem. They talk a lot about, well, we can just set these things up in 3 days. You can't. You know, you have to have the interconnection ready for you. Yeah, the final stage is 3 days, but it might take a year to get the interconnection hooked up. You can't just drop it anywhere you want when there's, because they talked about, well, when we see that there's more demand, we could just boom, drop another one right in there. Mm-hmm. It's not that easy, but you know, we'll see as they move forward.
Right on. All right. So Kyle, so last weekend you uploaded a video asking the question, what is 97% DC fast charger uptime? And you asked your audience for their opinions. And I believe you're looking to organize that information, those responses, and then share them in an upcoming video. So are you still looking for more responses? And if so, where can people leave them?
Oh, probably. I mean, I think we got the general idea by now. Okay. Yeah, you can leave them on that YouTube video comments. But for the most part, I'm going to take the top ones, which are the most interacted or the most agreed with.
Sure.
And then sum that up. There is an official NEVI definition of uptime now.
Okay.
You know, and that's all in the video, and I explain all of that. But right. I share my thoughts as to why that's probably not a great definition of uptime.
Right. I mean, personally, I would think I want every the pedestal, you know, the working, fully functioning, that right. would be so, uptime if it's, you know.
But you have to define fully functioning, because it can, that's
full, the point. It gives the power that it says it's going to give on, you know, it says 160 kilowatts. If my car can take that, I want it to be able to give me 160 kilowatts.
Right. But then it gets even more complicated than that, because if you have a 300 volt car, it might take more amps than that charger is rated for. So right now it says it's done on a per port basis, and that it outputs at the minimum, I believe, nameplate rating, something like that. So it's 150 kilowatts. But the problem is, you can say 150 kilowatts is 150 amps at 1,000 volts.
Right.
And so if you have a low voltage car, then, you know, at 150 amps, you might only be getting, you know, just over 50 kilowatts. But still technically be NEVI compliant. So you can't do kilowatts. You have to do amperage rating. But then, right. of course, you might have a Lucid Air that maxes out where the charger can't do the amperage rating. So it has to be an amperage and total power output, as well as a per port basis. And right now they do it on a minute by minute polling. So it's, you know, 525,000 something minutes per year. And how many of those minutes was the charger offline? And I mean, this is why I really wanted our YouTube commenters to be detailed, because these are the, you know, you can't go off kilowatts. You can't necessarily go that the charger's just on and appears to be functioning.
Right.
You can't go off of internal charger metrics per se, because if you chop a cable off a charger, most chargers have no idea that the cable's missing. And so, you know, the charger's going to say, yeah, I'm great. I'm up, you know, let's go. And then, you know, no one uses it for 2 weeks until someone realizes, oh crap, this charger hasn't been used. It actually hasn't been up. And then right. how long do you say that the charger hasn't been up? Or because it's all self-reported, do you not say that it hasn't been up? You know what I mean? So I think this is really getting ourselves into some deep trouble here. And for easy fibbing, and we've seen CEOs do some weird, wacky stuff. No question they're going to continue weird, wacky stuff with this 97% uptime requirement. Also, there's a new consortium, a new group called ChargeX. And I believe it's part of DOE and other things. I've requested join or to have out of spec join this. We'll see.
Okay. Ford has joined.
Say that again.
Ford has joined.
Oh, like Tesla, Rivian, Ford, ABB, EVgo, Tritium, you know, a ton of companies, Flow, they've all joined already. You know, I thought it'd be cool to have us represent the driver base from our side. So I requested to join. It's a big time commitment because we actually have to like show up and go to these in-person meetings and all this stuff. But I think it's important and it'd be cool to share what's going on our side. So, yep, basically, that charge deck could be a cool big thing or it could be really bad. Not sure yet.
Right. People are mentioning the stream seems to be something going on with our audio here. Like on us, for us, everything's kind of normal. I don't know if I rebooted my computer, would that kind of, is it, you know, cause I started the stream.
No, StreamYard packages it up and sends it.
Right. Right. It must be, it's gotta be StreamYard. You're on mute, Tom.
I was going to say, I haven't seen any choppiness or anything. Everything sounds perfect for me. So I guess, right. You know,
right.
It seems like a lot of people are reporting it. Sorry guys. I don't know how to correct that.
Yeah.
Since it sounds like it's mostly on my side, let me quit out and reopen.
Sure. But it was just me earlier having some sort of issue or something. So I guess if Kyle's dropping out, I can't ask him my next question. So, but just until he gets back, we should mention that this morning, Chevrolet or GM announced that the Chevrolet work truck WT range has been extended to 450 miles from, I believe, what they were saying 400 miles earlier. Some people were talking about that earlier in the comments this morning. So I thought that was kind of interesting and wanted to raise that at some point. Now seems like the perfect time.
Well, if you remember when Ford, the build up to launching the Lightning, they kept improving their stats and you know, on the vehicle, they just kept like it kept getting better. I bet you GM's doing the same thing. They probably didn't want to, you know, they had a goal ahead of time, but they cut that back and announced it's going to do this and this with the hope that they'd be able to meet their goals. And now they're realizing they can reliably say it's going to be that much. So they're making it sound better and better. You know, Ford did this and it worked because it got people excited. I bet you're going to hear more good news that the trucks are even better than what they promised as we get closer to the launch of the Silverado.
Yeah, better is all right. I'd like to see it cheaper, but I have a feeling that's not going to happen.
Yeah.
No. Kyle's shaking his head. How's your audio now, Kyle?
Yeah, I probably it's the same. And like everyone's saying, it's got to be our podcasting software spitting out the stream that's having issues. For those of you on YouTube, I believe we're also streaming on Twitter. If you head over there, you can take a listen. No one uses Twitch for podcasts, Dom. It's all Twitter. Twitter is the new thing. So yeah, go to Twitch or Twitter and you can see if it's a YouTube thing or if it's our podcast audio.
Right. All right. So, Kyle, you also posted videos of a few different cars this week, including a couple hybrid plug-in hybrids. So let's start with those real quick. One was the 2023 Volvo, correct me if I get this wrong, Volvo V60 Recharge plug-in hybrid T8 Polestar, which is apparently much improved. This one is the one with the 18.8 kilowatt hour battery. So all electric range is about 40 miles. We know you're a big Volvo fan and a fan of wagons, of course. And so it makes sense that you kind of really like this car. But what was it that was much improved that had you so enthusiastic?
Right. Well, it's all in the videos and we shouldn't harp on plug-in hybrids here for too long. But basically Volvo has, and this isn't just with the V60, it's across their plug-in hybrid range. They've just enhanced everything. The combustion engine is totally refined. So much nicer. They removed the supercharger and now it's just turboed. Previously, it was turbocharged and supercharged. And then the electric motor on the rear axle is beefed up almost twice the power output, much longer thermal longevity. So you can actually drive it in electric mode without getting rear-ended. The early ones were really slow and wasn't actually great. The battery pack, yeah, I've been getting, you know, 18-ish kilowatt hours, a little bit more pulled out of it. 40 miles, 44 miles, easy out of that car. Very good for daily driving. It was 2 or 3 hours sitting in LA traffic before the combustion engine fired up. And, you know, when you put it all together in a performance setting, it uses the electric as a boost and it rips and it's fast and it's a stealthy wagon. I mean, I really love the V60 Polestar engineered. That is one of my all-time favorite cars. And yeah, normally I'm not a plug-in hybrid guy at all, but you know, for certain applications, I'm into it. For this Volvo, I'm into it. It was cool.
All right. But this week you were, because you also had your hand, got your hands on a new Porsche Cayenne e-hybrid. That's the E3.2. And you posted a review on your personal channel, Kyle Connor, on YouTube. And it's a range test on the Out of Specs Reviews channel. So now this is, of course, the car that saved Porsche, and or at least it allowed it to grow into a significantly larger automaker than it ever had been. But that was quite a while ago. So what is Porsche doing to keep this car relevant?
Right. Well, again, all in the videos, but the new Cayenne is here and it's hugely updated. It's technically the mid-cycle refresh, but it's like an entirely new car. You know, so many technological changes, chassis improvements, drivetrain improvements. And I won't talk about the combustion ones, but they're pretty rowdy as well. The plug-in hybrid version gets a, you know, huge upgrade in power, a big upgrade in range as well. Again, mid 40 miles easy. We did in our range test on this vehicle. All of the tech is very similar to Taycan now. You get the passenger display. You get all the cool stuff. The one downside is, it's hard to keep it in electric mode, because even when you lock it in e-power, Porsches were always magical in the fact that they had a false floor that you could go to max out the electric power. Mm-hmm. And now that's gone. So you just kind of always have to guess before it turns on the combustion engine, which is a bit annoying. But again, I don't want to spend too much time on plug-in hybrids. I produced some really long videos on Out of Spec Reviews and the Kyle Connor YouTube channel. So check those out if you're interested. But both of those cars are very reasonable plug-in hybrids. The one downside with the Volvo, I should say, 3.3 kilowatt onboard charger at 3.6, totally unacceptable. With a hybrid, you always are going to be plugging it in to try and recapture your range.
Right.
We want the most amount of charging power. And the Cayenne was 10 or 11 kilowatts. So
10 or 11 is kind of reasonable, right?
But that's like what, my Rivian has an 11 kilowatt onboard charger, 12 kilowatt.
Right.
Yeah.
How did they miss that, Kyle? Like, you know, Rivian does a lot of things really well. How did they not put an 80 amp onboard charger on that car with a 140 kilowatt hour battery pack?
Yeah. Look, I would love more power. But I don't think anyone would ever, like, there's got to be less than 5% of level 2 chargers out there can do 80 amps.
You're talking about public. I don't care about public charging.
That's when you would want
people
it.
At home. No, people at home.
80 amps at home.
It takes me for, like, I'm spoiled because I can charge both vehicles. You know, I have the Rivian, I have the Lightning, and I have the 80 amp charger here. It's so funny. Like when I'm using the Rivian and the state of charge is low. I don't charge every day. You know, I use the garage as a studio. I keep the vehicles outside a lot. So when the Rivian gets really low, I'm like, oh shoot, you know, Meredith will be like, you know, it's like 10%. Okay, I come plug it in. And like that night I come out and the charge port's still blinking and the Lightning would have been done like halfway through the day. It's just, I know what you're saying. It's just that seems for a premium car, $100,000 car. It's not like they needed to drive down the price because, you know, they're popping these things out the door for $38,000. For that price, it should have been premium. And they're an electric vehicle company. They know how important charging is. It's not like an afterthought. And to me, that's a huge, huge, huge error on their part.
Let's see if they add it with MaxPack. That could be interesting.
Yeah, that would be nice, actually. All right,
11 kilowatts takes forever to charge the Rivian. Yeah. Really
I
does.
Mean, I totally get the benefits of 80 amp charging, but I never think of it from your viewpoint. Where for home charging, I always think of it as like if I'm out and about and I go to a racetrack and they have an 80 amp charger, or if I go to a store, I can recapture more energy. But you know, we have an 80 amp charger in the Lucid. I haven't found one public charger with it. And at home, like Tom, I don't know, I just think I'm fine with a 10 amp charger here.
Yeah. Most well, homes can't
it, that's and that works for you. I get that. You know, it's just and it will work for most people. Let's be clear here. Even most people that for home charging, 11 kilowatts is going to be fine. A vast majority of people. But there is a segment of the population that it's not good enough for, or would like to be able to charge quicker at home and at least offer it as an option, you know, in my opinion. To me, it's real easy. If your battery pack has a usable capacity of triple digits, it should have an 80 amp onboard charging option, in my opinion. And let people pay for it. If they want it, they can pay for it. Maybe not force it on everyone, but if that starts with a one, or God forbid a two, like the Hummer, you know, the battery pack, it really should. And yeah, the first world problems, Tom, the way back posted, of course. But you know what? If you're driving a $100,000 vehicle, you obsess on first world problems.
Right. Just the other point is not that many people can really have like a spare 100 amp circuit they can plug in, because like, you need at least 100 amps, right, for an 80 amp charger.
Right. Yeah, and to that, I'll say people that are buying $100,000 vehicles don't have a 100 amp main in their house, Dom.
Okay.
And they can afford a service upgrade.
Right. You would hope so.
Or we're going to have load management equipment that we are already starting to see it now. And, you know, you're going to have load management equipment that's going to be able to do all this. And you're going to be able to have high speed overnight charging. You know, even with 150 amp main, you'll probably be able to charge it at 80 amps overnight when there's nothing else going on in your house, but your refrigerator's running. And, you know, this is all going to work itself out. There's already a lot of really interesting load management equipment that's going to be coming to the market in the next couple of years. That's going to allow people to charge at high rates or manage the charging. You know, it'll intelligently lower your charging if the house can't supply the full 80 amps right now, but when it can, it'll jump it back up and it'll get the vehicles charged quicker.
Okay. All right. So
exactly, Steve. Let's eat low amperage. Let the commoners charge on level one.
All right. So let's get into some all electric vehicles. Kyle, the first one you drove this week, it shares that this is, this is a little bit odd. So it shares a chassis and a name with a combustion version. And sometimes this is a recipe for compromise, but maybe the engineer somehow, you know, doused this one with magic. I don't know. I've heard good things, but tell us a little bit about the GV70. That's from Genesis GV70.
Right. Well, they actually do have a different name than the combustion one, because it's called the Genesis Electrified GV70, which is like the first time any automaker has used the term electrified properly, because most people are like, here's our mild hybrid that just does start stop with a pancake engine, it's electrified. And Genesis is like, now this thing's fully electric, but we're not ready to call it an EV, it's electrified. So it's just, you know, naming conventions. But right. I actually still have it, the Genesis electrified GV70. And essentially what this car is you take the combustion GV70 smaller SUV. It's like the size of a Porsche Macan, a little bit smaller than an e-tron, somewhere around in there. And it's a beautiful looking vehicle. I mean, this thing has some road presence. It's built really well. Colton has a build quality video going on it soon. So like really unbelievable. I haven't seen the build quality video or talked to him about it. Maybe he found issues, but I think it's a really nicely built product. And then you rip out all the combustion stuff. They put in the EGMP powertrain. So it has the same battery pack as Ioniq 5. It has the same battery pack as the Genesis GV60 Performance, which is a dual 160 kilowatt permanent magnet motor setup. So it's spicy, well over 400 horsepower. And like this thing rocks. It looks great. It's so comfortable. It cruises everywhere. It's got great technology, great lane centering, very quiet inside. Not quite e-tron quiet, but that's a different pricing category when you go up for e-tron with the extra glazing that's, you know, $20,000 more. It's about 74 grand maxed out. And you know, it charges at 240 kilowatts, same charging curve as Ioniq 5. Originally, we didn't think that was the case, but I just did some testing and it is the same battery, same charging curve. So some of our viewers haven't been able to get over 200 kilowatts on their electrified GV70. I think it's a temperature thing because our car rips, same as Ioniq 5. Yeah, it rocks and like surprisingly quick, not that it needs to be, but massaging seat, you know, does all the stuff. It's not quite at the nice touch points of the Germans. Like you can tell they like described an e-tron or an iX over the phone. And then we got this, like it's almost there. It's not quite, but it's also not priced as high as those. So,
right, I was just going to say, it's the value, basically what you get for the money is good.
Oh, the value I think is great. And you know what? It's just such a well-baked package. The drivetrain works so nicely with this car. I literally have not had a chance to do a single efficiency test with it because it has rained every day this week.
Oh, you moved to Florida.
We chose Colorado because we had 330 days of sunshine. I guess all of the rain is this week. Because this is a vehicle I'm really curious about testing. I want to know its efficiency and its 10% challenge range because that's almost a make or break buying decision. Yeah, it's got a small battery, 77.4 kilowatt hours, compared it to Model Y, which is
Model Y.
Mid, 82 kilowatt hour, Mustang Mach-E, 91 kilowatt hour usable. So it's the smaller battery one. It charges like a monster. How would that do in the 10% challenge? You know, it's 10 to 80 in 18 minutes. I actually started the 10% challenge. It's 10 to 71 in 15 minutes. And then we're driving, beautiful day. I'm doing the 10% challenge and then we get hailed on and I'm like on ice going 3 miles an hour on the highway. So it's just crazy. Someone asked, is 77 kilowatt hours enough? Like, right. I don't know. I literally don't know the efficiency of this car. And I think we're going to have to ask for it back because it goes back today because I'm flying back to California in a few hours. And then I have the BZ4X to test and this has to go to someone else. So yeah, no idea about the specs or anything. It's really been a waste of a week with this car. I mean, I've driven it a lot and gotten to know it, but I haven't done any testing.
Right. So we don't know really about the range, but the range is going to be definitely less than a Model Y or a Mustang Mach-E then.
Oh, I couldn't imagine it would come close to either of those, but its road tripping range may surpass them.
Oh, really?
The 10% challenge.
Okay.
Yeah. Because it charges so fast.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
So it might actually be the road trip choice, even though the range is lower.
Right.
And talking about range, sorry, Dom, I didn't mention before when I was talking about what I was driving this week. I did, if you guys remember, a couple weeks ago, I did the Lightning versus R1T range test where I drove them side by side right before I sold the R1T. And I put the BF Goodrich KO2s on the Lightning so it would be comparable to the Rivian because that had their all-terrain tires. And I didn't think it'd be fair to compare an all-season tire with an all-terrain tire. So now I swapped them, and this weekend, like 10 days later, basically same temperature, drove the same course with my Lightning. And that video is going to be up in a couple of days. I'm comparing the Lightning, 10 days apart, so basically the same mileage and same wear on the battery, with the Bridgestone KO2s and then the stock General Grabbers. The General Grabbers, the all-season tires, did a lot better, as you might suspect. It did fairly better. Very good result, but that'll be coming on in a couple of days. Sorry to interject. I forgot that I did that. It just reminded me we're talking about range tests.
It's kind of amazing how big a difference a tire makes, like tire size or like tread pattern. It's like a huge difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So Kyle, you also spent some time with the new Audi Q8 e-tron. So previously this was referred to as the Audi e-tron, which I believe Alyssa owns, but it's been refreshed and there's been a lot of changes. So apparently you can't talk about the driving experience yet. I believe it's under embargo still.
Yeah, until Monday, sadly.
Okay.
Which is such a shame because I get why embargoes happen, right? It's right, to let all the media outlets who are slower get their stories together or who don't join on the first wave. But this is a card that's like been out in Europe and it's like at dealers in the US.
Right.
So, you know, I weighed the options right before I flew to California to drive this. I'm like, do I go now and agree to the embargo or will our dealer have the car before Audi will let us talk about it? And our dealer car here wouldn't arrive for a few days after the embargo. So this was the fastest way to get the coverage.
Right. But you could talk about some of the changes. And the one you had was like, it's the coupe version. They're all, there a Morpheus?
Yep.
Okay. This is the sport back. Is there the regular square one as well? Long roof?
Oh, yep. That hasn't changed.
Okay.
It's the same as the outgoing model. The current ones you can choose full size or sport back.
Okay. I just saw you with the sport back there and I was like really surprised how sedan like it looked. You know, it didn't look like an SUV in the video so much to me, you know?
Okay. No, didn't get that impression in person. It's really the same dimensions as the current e-tron sport back. And the car, I can't tell you how it drives, but I can tell you the updates.
Which you do in the video, but maybe you can give us a couple here.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some serious upgrades for 2024 with this car. First of all, the name is changed to bring it more in line with the rest of the Audi lineup. It signifies it's the top SUV. It doesn't mean it's the largest because Q7 is bigger than Q8 in combustion world, but Q8 is the coupified Q7, if you will. And the e-tron, it shows that it gets the highest, you know, A8 grade leather and build quality and extra sound deadening and everything. And that's why we love our e-tron, because the thing's a bank vault. It is truly next level. They went way overboard with this car. Now, granted, they went so overboard, we barely have enough range to get out of our driveway because it's so inefficient. This is like one of the least efficient electric cars on the market. But it charges so well, the existing outgoing model, you know, our car just sits at, you know, 150 kilowatts to 80%. And that means it's actually a good road tripping car. Not that we really have driven ours on many road trips. We drove it across the country when we first got it, but that's kind of it. It just stays around town and it's been wonderful. The new Q8 has a much larger battery. It has gone from 86 kilowatt hours usable to 106 kilowatt hours usable. Woo. So 20 kilowatt hours more usable energy content. The gross capacity is 114. So a pretty big buffer on the new car as well, typical Volkswagen Group style. And, you know, its peak charging rate has increased from 150 kilowatts to 170 kilowatts. Now, granted, we've seen 170 kilowatts on our car. And we've also maybe we shouldn't have, but the Signet Surge thing used to exist back when I saw that. The, new car has a bigger peak, but the curve is different. And I have not tested the charging curve. I'm going to. Audi's going to send us an SUV. The launch event's over. I hope it's on its way here right now because I want to compare it to our car and do the actual testing of, is it worth it for us to upgrade to a Q8 e-tron? And you know, the bigger battery is the big thing. The charging peak speed is another, but the curve doesn't look nearly as good as the outgoing model. And the reason is there's so much less cobalt in this new battery chemistry that, you know, it might be more affected by the cold. And, you know, it has a more traditional, you know, bell curve, if you will. It on paper, the Q8 never stacks up, or the Q8 e-tron never stacks up well against its competition. You know, when you compare it to iX, when you compare it to Model X, even in some cases, when you compare it to this GV70, it can't match what these cars can do on paper, but there is that sense of Audi presence, the quality of the materials, the solidity that does make it one of the cars I recommend and the one that would make us only consider actually getting another e-tron if we were to upgrade this car. So I can't tell you how it drives yet. I can say Audi has reworked the suspension tuning. So all of the damper controls are different, and also they beefed up the lower control arm bushings. 50% over the current one in terms of stiffness, and the S model is 100% over the outgoing model. I can't tell you how it feels, but what I can tell you is Audi claims a 10% improvement in steering feel. Now, that is like the most German metric I've ever heard of, because how do you quantify that? Like, there's like, just tell me the metrics that you're basing that off of. That was the funniest thing in the whole presentation. I was just like, what are you talking about? So I don't know.
Right.
Klaus, the engineer, said it's 10% better.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, you can say like German accent.
Mixed German and Irish accents.
But, you know, I went to California to drive this thing. And what I thought was, you know, it was a really beautiful event. They had great roads, all that stuff, all good. I really wish there were engineers there that I could, you know, super nerd out with, because yeah, I had a lot of technical questions of course, coming as an owner of one of these, you know, wanting to know what's different and didn't. I mean, it's just like, I'll just have to wait to test it until we get the SUV. So don't expect anything super nerdy. And there was something else. Oh, during the drive loop, which I can't tell you how the car drives, but
right,
what I can say is, you know, Audi expected all of the cars back at the ending point where we're supposed to drop them off at 20 or 30% state of charge. It was a beautiful driving loop, you know, going up PCH and around some canyons and stuff. And I got to what I thought was the ending point at like 12%, like this. And then they're like, oh no, you actually got to do another 60 miles to get to the end. I'm like, I only got 12%. Like, I'm sorry, I miscalculated, because they kept putting, you know, telling us to put the nav in leg by leg. Right. And so, yeah, that was really funny. So I limped it at like 30 miles an hour, efficiency mode, suspension aired out to a charge point charger, plugged in at 1%. Of course, I, you know, can always make it to a charger. And, you know, DC fast charged it up for them, so I didn't give them back a dead car. But that was really funny. And it just shows that, like, the e-tron's not meant to be a performance ripper, but all of the you know, improvements to the car have been on the performance side of things. So that's what I was testing. And it just shows that most journalists don't drive that hard, is what I've learned.
Right. I mean,
not yeah, that I was going fast. I mean, I really was like, I'm doing the e-tron thing. I'm driving it like how we drive our car, how I, right, you know, Alyssa drives her car, and right, like, you know, not going hard. And then I was like, oh, I'm out of range, and everyone else has 50%.
Right. So yeah. I drove the Ioniq 6 last week, and I had passengers with me, so I couldn't really drive. They weren't really automotive journalists, so I couldn't really drive like I you know, I would like to. Like when I drove the Cadillac Lyric, I had a you know, an automotive writer with me, and yeah, it was no problem to, you know, get on it here and there, not the whole ride, but you know, you want to hear, you know, feel the dynamics, you want to get an idea of the acceleration, of the recuperation, the regeneration from different speeds, you know, all that stuff. So you do need to push it, you know, sometimes.
Right. It was so funny when I was pulling out, Audi was like, well, you know, we need some tread left on these tires. So they knew what was going on. But honestly, I didn't really took it nice and gentle. I guess our version of gentle might be different than others. But yeah, can't tell you anything more than that until Monday.
Right.
But okay, it's all on video and it's really funny. So I hope you check that video out.
Awesome. Right on. All right. So let's talk about some news this week. There's a bunch of different things going on here. So our headline news is Tesla held its annual shareholding meeting this week in Austin, Texas, just a few couple days ago. And they talked about how Elon talked about how FSD was going to transform the world and how robots will be a bigger deal than cars. But what I thought was more interesting was the silhouette of the car behind him on the screen as he talked about future product. Let me see if I can share that image with you now. This is where we miss Martin the most, because this takes me a moment. And we'll bring that up here like this and just scroll down to this and pop that up. And there we can see that. Okay. All right. So Musk said there are two new products that he's especially excited about, which he predicted could sell as many as 5 million units a year. That's a lot. One is something they are building right now, and the other is something they are still designing. So I think it's fair to guess that one of these is the Cybertruck, and the other, well, the image looks to me like a Model 3 maybe. And I think our writer thought you know, when he was writing about it, I think he mentioned it. He thought it was the refreshed Model 3, codenamed Project Highland. But I think that was already basically, I mean, that's basically designed already. And in fact, we shared a photo of the new Highland thing that, you know, presumably was that car a couple weeks ago. But the car they're designing now is one that will be made in the Mexico Gigafactory, the so-called $25,000 car, or the cheaper Tesla. So it makes sense to me that this is the car that he's talking about, because they're not just focusing on building significantly more manufacturing that car. It's sold, the Model 3 is sold like 4 million units in a little over 5 years. So this, I can't see a path to doubling that anytime soon with, you know, without more installed capacity, which, you know, the capacity they're building is for the number two, or the Tesla, you know, we call it the low cost car, or some people call it the Tesla Model 2. It hasn't really been given a name yet. So I guess the question is, what is this car in the silhouette? Is this the new Model 3, or is it the new low-cost car? I don't know. I've stared at it too long, but I had myself convinced last night that it's like a cross between the Model 3 and the Model Y, but smaller a little bit. I don't know. Kyle, tell me why I'm wrong.
Well, I mean, it's hard to predict future plans with Tesla ever. I'm not sure it makes sense to harp too much on it. You know, I always say it's not a car until it's on sale. And nothing is more true in the world of Tesla, because you know, they'll announce a product and then just like stop talking about it a few years later, Roadster. So, you know, that's the one I'm really excited for. And hopefully, you know, I watched the shareholders thing, by the way, Tesla, but I don't own any automaker stock. So I, you know, could never go to one of these things, but they look like they just have a freaking blast. Like that is a celebration of the company, right there. You know, the retail investors are like just loving Tesla left and right. It's so funny. You know, the big dudes are asking all the hard questions, which is great and needed, but it just looks like a big celebration every year. And I know some people that went, and it just sounds like an awesome party. You compare that to pretty much any other company's you know, shareholder meetings. They're like the most dry, boring, awful things ever. And Tesla's throwing these massive parties. So I love the Tesla spirit. I think that's great. You know, hard to say what this will be. Of course, I believe both models, the general consensus is they're models that we haven't heard of yet. So I don't believe one of those is the Cybertruck. And, you know, it could be, you know, the Model 2 or the small car plus something else. But no question, we know they're working on the cheaper version. People are convinced this is the less expensive version. And I don't disagree. I believe that's what this is as well. You know, I thought the earnings call was pretty cool. And, you know, to me, Elon seemed down to earth, answering a ton of questions and really giving people time, which I thought was great. You know, more transparency coming out of the company for sure. We're starting to see some of their, you know, internal programs being shown, you know, through, you can call it marketing or whatever, but on Twitter, they're posting these videos of what Tesla is doing internally. I think they're very nicely produced. I think that's the best way to build some enthusiasm back up for the car company. Mm-hmm. So from the product side, you know, I was driving my Model S the other day, the whole FSD situation. I've been quite critical of FSD over the years, of course. I think regular autopilot is amazing. I've always loved that. But, you know, I drove from the airport back up to my house because now it's a full single stack. And it did it all. You know, I took over twice, not for safety, but to make it so I don't look like an idiot trying to merge into traffic or whatever. But okay. Like huge improvements, you know, in the last few weeks of their you know, driver assistance system.
What version do you have?
Don't even know. I don't get whatever the newest is. I'm usually pretty early on this car. Now that I got the newer updates, it's been constantly updating.
Okay. I haven't gotten one in a while now. I think I'm still on 11.3.4, I think.
Yeah.
Stop at yield signs. You know, it treats yield signs like stop signs.
Yeah. I have to run out to the car because I don't think there's a way to look on my phone here, but it scooches over for other cars on the highway.
Right.
So when you come past a truck, it moves over now, which is like not anything new. You know, that's Blue Cruise has done that. There's other systems that have done that. You know, the Ioniq 5 EV6 has done that since launch with HDA2. So I love everything that's going on. I think it's great. It's changing the automotive landscape probably for the better.
Right. And to your point, there is like, you know, great enthusiasm over the Tesla brand. It's like, it's kind of crazy that, you know, that level of excitement exists, you know, for cars.
And I think like a lot of people see the super fans. They see the ones that are obviously like, you know, just own a ton of stock and will say anything to make the company appear good. And we all know that situation. But recently I've been coming across, I think, more well-rounded Tesla fans, because it's very much polarizing. You either love it or hate it for most people. Right. But I think it's everyone in some way should appreciate what Tesla has done, you know, in my opinion, at least. And that shareholder meeting was fun. That was cool to watch. I really enjoyed it.
Right on. Okay. Cake Better points out here that Elon once said they're only making the Model S X for sentimental reasons. Take that for what it's worth. I think that's what you say when you're not selling a lot of cars, but you know, you like to put the emphasis on what is going well, you know. And for a Tesla right now, that's Model Y. You know, it's going extremely well. They're selling a boatload of those, and yeah, and hopefully soon Cybertruck. But speaking of Tesla, while we're talking about them, there was a little thing that came out, and I think Tom, you mentioned this morning as we got on, because it broke yesterday, but I didn't notice it until like 1 a.m. last night. Let me just pull up this article here. Right, Texas. So Tesla's moved its headquarters to Tesla into Texas. They've built this huge gigafactory there, employing thousands of people. And Texas apparently has thanked them by signing a new electric vehicle tax into law, like a Tesla tax. Well, I mean, it's a tax on every electric vehicle, but, you know, Tesla is the largest seller of electric vehicles, especially in Texas. And yeah, it's a lot more expensive now to register an electric car. And
yeah, well, we're gonna somehow, the money that is not being harvested with gasoline tax has to be replaced. You know, I don't know, and I don't have the exact solution of what's the best way to do that. Do we meter EVSE and put a penny on every kilowatt hour, or do we do it through registration fees? You know, I always thought that the fairest way to charge people for road tax, let's say, would be some sort of a mileage tax, where you know your annual mileage gets registered somehow through your insurance company or somehow, because that's really how you the best. And there'd be different categories depending on the weight of the vehicle. The heavier the vehicle, maybe you pay a little bit more per mile. But the way they have it set up now, it seems the states that are implementing these EV registration fees to they're using it, they're saying, well, this is because you're not paying gas tax. They seem to be extremely heavy-handed, where the EV ends up paying more than what a comparable gas car would cost per year. Now, the Texas one, I think that was proposed, is a $400 initial registration fee. On top of your registration, you're going to pay an extra $400. Then I think it's $200 per year. So, you know, you could do the math and figure out how many cents per gallon of gas people are paying in that state. What's the average miles per gallon, and do the numbers. But, you know, you look at it, if you own an EV for 5 years, you're paying $400 extra upfront, and then you're paying $1,000. So it's $1,400 in tax for 5 years of driving. And what if you only drive, you know, 5,000 miles a year? You know, you're not a heavy mileage person, or 8,000 miles a year. You can do the numbers, and it will easily cost much more than what you would be paying for gas, for your gas tax. So I know we have to figure this out. EVs have to pay their fair share. When electric vehicles were like, you know, 1% of sales, I was not big on beginning to institute these. I always said once we get to around 25% adoption is when we have to start really moving into this space where we have to make it fair for everyone. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's fair to just levy these arbitrary numbers. You know, I think we almost need to redo the whole refueling tax, even with gas cars. So everybody's on the same level field. Maybe create three weight classes and then say, you know, if you're in this weight class, whether you have a gas car or an electric vehicle, you pay you know, 0.13 cents per mile. If you're in this class, you pay a little more, and then remove the gas tax. And so we all pay the same way as gas phases out and electric vehicles become more prevalent. And now if there's a third fuel, if hydrogen cars start to proliferate, which I don't believe they're going to, we don't have to reinvent a whole new method or the next fuel if something else comes. Do a mileage-based system based on weight, because weight is really what is going to create extra wear and tear on the roads, and have everybody pay fairly in the same way. That's how I would do it.
Right. The way it is now, this is like a penalty, like they're penalizing people for buying electric vehicles, which is crazy because, you know, it's not their biggest employer, of course, but, you know, it's like a lot of high tech jobs, a lot of good paying jobs, a lot of taxes are going back into the Texas government, state government, from Tesla's presence. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of like mind boggling. And Tesla still can't even have like stores, right? They can't sell stores.
Right. Yeah. You can have it delivered to your house, but you can't because the sale has to take place outside of the state. So Tesla's main website's in California or whatever. So that's where the sale occurs. And then they just deliver it to you. But they certainly don't seem to be very EV friendly. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, it's
doesn't
crazy.
Surprise you. It's an oil and gas state. You know, I mean, that's where it's Texas.
I mean, but it's also, they also have, you know, tons of renewable electricity there. And I don't know. It just doesn't, I feel like, I don't know, maybe Elon hasn't really put any pressure or hasn't tried to negotiate with the guy at all, or maybe he has, and this guy's inflexible. Yeah. I don't know. But anyway, I guess we'll leave that to
the lobbyists are stronger than Elon in Texas.
I don't know, man. All right. So while we're also on Tesla, we also reported this week that it is demolishing a production line at the Fremont factory and will install new equipment. I believe that's the so-called tent outside structure. So that to me says that the refreshed Model 3 might look like the current one, but aside from the front and the rear, but underneath it's going to be like completely different, I think. I think we should expect to see it follow the path of Model Y and maybe have like large castings for the front and rear, eliminating a lot of time and welding. But that's speculation, of course. But Tom, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it's, you know, I've heard from people in the industry and even people that worked for Tesla that, you know, the Fremont factory, it was great for Tesla to start, and they were able to, you know, get going on. They got it for like nothing. Like, what was it, $40 million or something they bought?
Yes,
which, you know, for a factory. But I've heard this throughout the years that it's just, you know, the thing needs to be demolished and rebuilt because the line is not conducive to modern manufacturing. And, you know, it's probably long overdue. We hear about how it seems like the build quality from Fremont vehicles lags behind all of the other factories that Tesla has made. So, you know, maybe this is the way to go and, you know, bite the bullet now and, you know, really completely overhaul the manufacturing line. I don't know to what extent they're going to do it, but hopefully that, you know, enables Tesla to even step up their game even more. Make no mistake, Tesla's manufacturing has gotten much better. I talked down on it earlier in the show today, and rightfully so. The first few years, I mean, you know, you had to look past a lot of stuff, but their cars were so good. The EV part of it, the electric, the interfaces, the drivability was so good. You didn't care if the gaps were this wide on one end and this wide on the other end. And they have gotten better. But, you know, Fremont is probably, the vehicles that come out of Fremont are probably the lowest quality in all of Tesla's factory. And that's not just me speculating. And maybe this will help improve that.
Right. And this is just one line. I think they have a couple of different lines for Model 3s there. So I don't know. Something just to keep an eye on. Also about Tesla, I want to mention this too. The state Supreme Court in Delaware has reversed a ban on Tesla's store sales. So as like in many states or some states like in Texas, they you know, had a ban on Tesla opening stores there because they say it contravenes the dealership laws. Like, so a lot of states have laws where if you sell to dealers, sell your products through dealers, you can't come in and build your own store. But Tesla doesn't sell to dealers, so that really shouldn't apply to them. But, you know, like some states tries, you know, to use that as a reasoning to keep Tesla stores. Automotive dealers have generally pretty strong lobby groups within state governments, or, you know, or addressing state governments. And so, they, you know, they have a loud voice when it comes to making these kinds of laws. So it's kind of nice. I think that the Tesla model, having private stores, if you don't have dealers, you're not competing with them. And I really don't see the issue with allowing them to have stores. So I was very happy to see this decision. I don't know if Kyle, you want to say anything about that? Not really.
No, I think you guys covered this whole topic pretty well.
Okay. So if we want to move along. All right. I was pretty disappointed.
Before you jump into the next thing, another thing I just remembered. I got a call this week. My Bolt has been built.
Oh, I said about that earlier. I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah.
It's going to be one of the last ones.
They still say that it's still probably a month from being delivered, because they still have backlogs with, we don't have enough truck drivers. So vehicles sit on the lots. And my dealer told me, at least it's taking them 2 weeks longer than it used to get vehicles on their lot, because of just since this last year or two, they just can't get the vehicles off the lots. There's not enough truck drivers. So, you know, he said expect a month. So, but it was just built this week. So, you know, we'll be getting the Bolt will be coming in the garage soon. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to have fun with that thing. I like the Bolt.
Yeah.
DC cool. Fast charging, brutal, but that's okay. I won't be going on road trips with it.
So I was kind of disappointed Martin couldn't be with us because I really wanted to get his thoughts on this next story. So Honda has just revealed the second all-electric vehicle for Europe. So let me bring it up, actually, so we know what we're talking about. Oh, Martin. Hopefully things will straighten out soon, and he'll be with us consistently. We're working on something there. There it is.
Any hints too early, Dominic?
Oh, no, it's not this. Yeah. All right. So that is that there. And so, you're right. There we go. So say hello to the Honda e-NY1 or e-anyone. I don't know. I don't know what's going on with his name. It's like an e-NY1. So if it looks a little.
You have to say it.
e-NY1. Yes. I don't like. Right.
What are they thinking?
I can make some jokes there, but I will not.
Well, did you see the naming? Because this vehicle is basically the same vehicle that they've already sell in China.
Right.
Have you seen what they call it in China? It's even longer. Add like an exclamation point and a and an asterisk in the name.
Right. So if it looks familiar, that's because they already make two different versions of this in China with two separate joint ventures. So they have the Honda e-NS1, which is made by Dongfeng Honda, and the e-MP1, which is GAC Honda. And I believe those two are essentially the same, but, you know, different factories. So it's very likely that one of these two factories will also supply Europe with the e-NY1. I'm just going to call it e-NY1. Since Honda has closed its European factories in the UK and Turkey last year. So spec-wise, we're looking at a WLTP range of 256 miles, that's 412 kilometers, from a 68.8 kilowatt hour battery. It's all based on the new e-N architecture F platform, which they say is a front motor driven design, and that motor will put out 150 kilowatts, that's 201 horsepower, and 229 pound feet of torque. DC fast charging, they say, will take 45 minutes to go from 10 to 80%, which is, you know, not stunning, I think it's fair to say. I don't know. Since Martin's not here to give his thoughts about this car, Tom, I need you to tell us in your best British accent that your New Jersey upbringing will let you do to tell us what Martin would say about it.
I tried the British accent before. It didn't work. It morphed into an Irish accent. So I'm going to pass on that.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, it's pedestrian. It's like an HRV, right? Like looks like the regular Honda HRV kind of, except the nose is a little different. I think it's, you know, a decent vehicle. it's nothing earth shattering. It's what I expected from Honda. Honda's very like practical, and you know, they don't push the bounds too often. And you know, it's, I think it's a cool vehicle. Name's horrible. You know, there's nothing amazing about it. It's not going to, you know, garner a ton of interest. But if they put this out in decent numbers, produce them in decent numbers, and it's not too expensive, I can see people driving this.
It's okay.
You know, nothing to get excited about, but
right,
none of Honda's cars really excite me. You know, they're just practical, reliable transportation. This is a family mover, a little, you know, people mover. It's not big, but that size EV vehicle, at least Honda sells a lot of the HRVs. So, you know, I think it has decent range. Charging isn't horrible. You know,
horrible.
This would work for a lot of people.
So you mentioned the HRV, and I believe our writer Dan mentions it as well a few times. And historically, it's and Sly Fred mentions it here on Twitch. From what I've already heard, it is in fact built on a new HRV / EV dual platform. So I'm not sure if that's what the F architecture of the E platform. It's so confusing. Honda, what are you doing? right, the E:N architecture F platform. But yeah, it's about HRV kind of size and design, and it seems to share some sort of parts. I don't know, Kyle, do you have any inside scoop on this at all?
Oh, nope, sorry.
No, it's okay. No,
I don't even know why we're talking about it. It's not coming to the US, right?
Right. Well, I thought Martin would be with us and he could talk about it because it's more exciting for him, because it'll be a big deal over there. It's like Honda's only second, and it's such a, you know, it's changed from the Honda E, which is like a cute, you know, small hatchback. It's got, you know, it's compelling in its own way, and it's got also a little bit of a price tag. This, I think, is going to need a pretty small price tag to really garner interest. You know, it's entering a competitive market. I'm just not sure what Honda is doing for sure with this.
They should just,
we don't have pricing, though, right?
No, I don't think we have pricing yet.
Yeah, well, that's gonna make all gonna
right, all the difference. I think it all hinges on pricing.
That's why I said if it's decently priced, right. I think it'll sell. It's not,
but the Honda E is like really not decently priced.
Yeah, I know,
right? So it's like there's no real. I can't. Honda's strategy for electric vehicles is a little bit confusing for me. I'm not sure what's going on there, but yeah. All right, so let's move along. I wasn't going to bring up this next story because Tom makes fun of me every time I talk about Rimac, but I was looking over.
No, this is totally worth talking about.
Okay. Absolutely. Okay. I wasn't sure you were going to say that, Kyle, either. But so I was looking
Sorry to interrupt, Tom. This morning when I was going to get my coffee, people at the shop were talking about that never really talk about EVs. They're like, really? Did you see that the record was set from, you know, 0 to 259 to 0? And the guy's like, yeah, it was electric. And I was just smiling.
Right on. Yeah. So I was looking over some of the numbers, and they're pretty astonishing for a production car. Even if that car is like hand-built and costs over $2 million, we're still talking about, you know, electric components and getting grip and just so many things. And it's just so much quicker. So it beat its own published 0 to 60 specs for starters. So 1.74 seconds instead of 1.85. This is with a 1 foot rollout, but not on a prepped surface. So no glue or anything. This puts it slightly quicker than the Pininfarina Battista, which is built on the same chassis and is, it actually had a quicker time than the Navaris spec. They had a 1.79, so it put itself back in the top again. So we have a whole list of the speeds and associated times over on our post on, actually it's on Motor One. And let me just pop that up for y'all. And Rimac Navarro, it set 23 records.
Yeah.
Which is,
I like that it did crazy. A half a mile in under 13 seconds. Like I remember when like
quarter mile,
when me and my friends would half a mile. And
right. But your friends.
When we were like building cars from the '60s and stuff, everyone was trying to get down under 13 seconds, like with their car for the quarter mile. This lapped us, you know, that's just nuts. half a mile in 12.8. Like, that's nuts.
Right. The one that was impressive to me was the 0 to 249 miles an hour. That's 400 kilometers an hour, which is like, man, back to zero again in 29.294 seconds. So less than half a minute. So that's a second and a half faster than the Koenigsegg Regera, which is also a very impressive car by itself, which took like 31.49 seconds. So Kyle, these numbers are pretty mind-boggling. Can you imagine driving a car that would eat your plaid for lunch or maybe breakfast? I don't know.
Sadly, yes, I can. Sometimes I drive the plaid and I'm like, ooh, it could use more here because we're not roasting tires. So,
oh, really? Okay. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
So when are you going to Croatia?
Yeah, I know. I really need to set up a drive of one of these because this is just everything I love. It's pushing the boundaries on so many levels. And you know what? All the like hardcore Tesla people are like, but watch my Roadster do it for $250,000. I'm like, yeah, but you can't buy that. And you know, this is the latest, greatest pushing the tech. Yes, it's expensive. They're not mass producing these. They can't. It's very high quality, very intricate parts, next level engineering. And keep in mind, this car is also a test bed for their driver assistance system, their full stack software. They're not just there to make electric cars fast. They are really, and Rimac doesn't get enough public credit for it, really pushing the limits in so many areas. So the car is like super understated looking. I think it's a bargain for the price. You really get such a cool car that, you know, is really next level. 500 kilowatt charging, you know, setting all these speed records. It's just the thing to have. Now, of course, no one's really going to be able to have one, but thankfully Nico Rosberg does have his. So we're able to follow some of his adventures with the car and so all good.
Right.
Got to get one to Colton to do a build quality video.
Right. Real consumer advice here. Yes.
That would be great. I'm actually pretty curious what they're going to do next. You know, are they going to keep it like, I have a feeling they're going to keep it very specialized because now Rimac is hooked up with a Bugatti. And so, you know, it's a very exclusive club. And with, you know, the cutting edge sort of performance and luxury and different things. So I'm curious where they're going to go with this. I would really like to see some of the Rimac technology and in just regular cars that we can buy. Like, I don't know why some of these companies who are kind of late to the party just kind of like, hey, engineer or powertrains for us, because you know, they know what they're doing with powertrains and batteries.
But they may not have the time. Like, they got their own projects and their own stuff. They just
sure.
May not
I mean,
have
well, that's capacity. Part of what they do, though. I mean, they make cars, but the big chunk of their business is engineering for other companies, right?
Absolutely. But I mean, if you're asking them to engineer a full platform for someone else, that may not
that's
be
big.
The best use of their time. But like, you know, Porsche owns a large stake of them now.
True.
And I think this is going to be, you know, this is the new Lamborghini of our time.
I think there'd be some cross-pollination there with Porsche too, right? There'd be some,
we'll
Rimac
see.
Technology in there?
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they have perhaps the sports car, the, you know, Boxster EV, which will come after Macan EV. That could be the first one we see. Maybe some Rimac stuff in there. But I don't think anytime soon, really, because the next Porsche electric models will be Macan, Boxster, and then Cayenne. And, you know, Cayenne doesn't need any Rimac stuff in it. That's maybe it does, but, you know, that's pretty easy for them to do.
Right. I mean, yeah, Porsche already has a decent powertrain technology going on, and it's going to be so much better in the next version, right? They still, the Taycan still has a 2-speed transmission.
Yeah. So, but Macan's going to be built on PPE. So a totally different and actually like largely Audi engineered drivetrain and, platform, I should say.
Right. All right. I mean, that's basically what I have here today as far as the news. I don't know if there's something else y'all want to talk about.
So there's one other thing I want to mention.
Sure.
I'm having a Ford F-150 Lightning barbecue.
Oh. In you barbecue June. your truck?
You so I'm going to host at my house a meet. It is only for F-150 Lightning owners, not people that have an order or are interested in F-150 Lightning. I partnered with the Northeast F-150 Lightning Club and Ford. And in June, I'm going to have a barbecue here where we're going to have F-150 Lightning owners get together, talk about their car. Ford's going to bring one or two of their engineers to answer any kind of tactical questions owners have. So if you have a Lightning and you feel like driving to Northern New Jersey on June 17th, reach out to me and I'll get you the deets. But it's, as I said, I've hosted a lot of these meetups. Kyle could tell you, that's how I first met Kyle at least 10 years ago. I had a BMW electric vehicle meet back at my restaurant more than 10 years ago, right, Kyle? I mean, I don't even know when that was, 2012 or something like that.
Something early, yeah.
Yeah, so I've done these in the past. I used to host them at my restaurant, and then I moved that over to doing them at my house. But when I do it at my house, I do have like rules, like people just can't show up. You have to be, you know, in the part of the group that we're having that I'm hosting it for. So this is strictly for F-150 Lightning owners. So you can reach out to me, and if you're interested, Nathan, I don't know if you're on Facebook or not. But if you are, join the Northeast Lightning Club, and all the details are in that on Facebook. If not, you can reach out to me directly, and I'll get you the details.
Okay. How can they reach you directly?
So my Inside EV's email address, you can through the site here. You could leave comments on my YouTube channel. You could ping me on Twitter. There's a lot of ways you could
reach me down. That's true. Ping me on Twitter. That's always a good one. All right. So I think.
One last thing. Electrify Expo's this weekend. I'm about to go catch a flight and I'll be out there. So if you're in the LA or Southern California area, it seems like everyone's going to be there. Tesla's actually, it's like the first event I've seen Tesla officially at. So they'll be there. A whole bunch of other automakers, Volvo, Ford, some others. So I'll be there hanging out filming.
Yeah, we have a couple of minutes. Actually, we were going to have a guest on today, and they got canceled at the last moment on us. But
probably because they saw what we say about their charging.
I don't think so, but you never know. Maybe we'll find out if they reschedule. We're supposed to reschedule. So, but maybe really quick, then tell us, give us an outline of what the Electrify Expo is about.
It's my first one. So I'm going to go find out. But it seems like this festival, this traveling festival that goes to different cities across the country. And I don't know. It seemed like this one was like a bigger one in particular. And I knew some people that were going. So I'm like, okay, well, we'll fly out for the day, film some videos tomorrow, Saturday, and then pop back. Today, it's like an industry day. It's a panelists are talking. And I don't know. I it's always funny. We always get asked to do these panels and things like that. I'm like, you get my thoughts for free on YouTube. So just watch those. But yeah, so it's going to skip all that. I was hoping for good weather to get one or two tests in with the GV70, but it's raining still. So unfortunately not. But yeah, the Electrify Expo seems like a cool event.
I assume it's going to be a great place to go and see exactly like a good variety of the electric vehicles available for consumers today, and maybe drive them. I don't know.
Yeah, I think there's some ride and drive. There's a lot of e-bike stuff as well, which is kind of interesting to me. Yes. Micro mobility products. So all around seems like a cool little thing.
Right on. All right. So we're not going. We went over last week so long. We're going to make up for it today. And so I think that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. If you didn't like the show, please give us a thumbs up if you're watching us on YouTube. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomalog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. And Kyle Connor is at, it's Kyle Connor. I'm at Dominic on Post.News and Mastodon and Spotable. Click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us. Good to see you. And we'll see you again next week. Ciao. Ciao.